it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world to record new bumpers. Shame.
No, you are not. You're not getting rid of the door.
The door is locked in. But the spinner.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Brian Hartman.
That's me.
Drew Landry.
Hey, I'm back. Hey.
And that's all. I don't know why I didn't say "and" before I introduced Drew. It's my fault. If you can hear it through my voice, I'm a little congested and been taking some cold medicine, and that make the brain a little iffy. So here we are. We're going to discuss tonight another episode of What Have You Been Watching? This is our fourth. We are recording a fifth concurrently with this one, so we'll have those in your iTunes feed or wherever you get our podcast coming to you back to back. In the next week or so. Let's just get right into it. Brian, what have you been watching?
I will start with Elf. It's a tradition when we put up our Christmas tree to watch Elf. And the first time I watched Elf, I wasn't a huge fan, but it's one of those movies that every time I watch it, it grows on me. So I just encourage everybody to go watch it again. It's just a funny show. It's very cute. It's kid-friendly.
Is it one of those movies that your kids insist on watching over and over again?
Oh, no, not at all.
Do you have that as a parent of two small children? Like movies that are just on repeat?
They get like hooked for a little bit. Like recently they've been into Sing.
That's tough.
It could be worse. Could be much, much worse. I think so.
Sing strikes me as particularly painful.
It's all dubbed with professional singers, so that's not bad.
We discussed before we started recording that I might be bringing some obscure foreign movies, and that's how I'm going to start this episode of What Have You Been Watching with a 2001 movie from Norway called Together, directed by Lucas Moodysson. It's about like a commune in a Norwegian suburb, and just how these people interact with each other. And the instigating incident is that a new family moves in. Their family's going through some rough times. The dad's a bit of an alcoholic, and they're just meeting everyone in the commune and bouncing off of each other. And like the knock on Norwegian people, I think, is that they're very cold and practical, literally and emotionally as well. But this is not the first movie I've seen from Scandinavia that just completely wins you over by how warm it is at the end, where you are completely brought around to all these characters and their camaraderie. And it's not just a full-throated defense of, like, welfare socialism or anything like that. Like, it's not so annoyingly lefty as to validate a lot of the beliefs of the furthest left people in the commune. It finds the happy medium between, like, this free-living, non-judgmental lifestyle with the more quotidian suburban life that their neighbors are living. So, Together, it was excellent. Great movie.
There's a Planet Money did a podcast about the Oneida Corporation, which makes like silverware and stuff now.
Sure.
That was a commune in upstate New York, and it was one of their better episodes ever. So I'm going to add Together to my list of things to see here.
Yep. I watched it because it was expiring from Netflix. So good luck with that.
But John, I want to mention how you're talking about the Norwegian movie Together. Yep. When I was a DJ back in our college days at WUEV, being the DJ and producer, I'd get these bands from Norway and Denmark and Sweden, and then they would tell me how awesome this hard rock, this slash metal band is in Norway and Denmark, and I would play it, and I'd think, all right, this is going to be really good, and it was very disappointing.
Just the metal in general. I mean, I can't find any artistic redemption in it. I don't understand it.
Well, when it comes to metal, I mean, it's all hard guitar and a lot of drums, but there's different types of that, which that's a whole different conversation.
Sure, that's for what have you been listening to? But yeah. Drew, what have you been watching?
Right. Drew? Well, what I've been watching, I actually saw Justice League not too long ago. And I have to tell you, it's about a C minus. You could talk me down maybe to a D. I think the MMC has been pretty good about looking at Zack Snyder's films and going, eh. And I think, John, it was you who said that I think 300 might have been the exclusion to the rule, like like the little exception to it. Because
I think that movie is due for a reevaluation.
I think you might be right, but I just look at that and it's, you know, you think, what, you know, how could bad films come from this? But from this director, and I don't know what he's trying to say here. I don't know. I don't know. I get really frustrated talking about Justice League and even DC movies outside of Batman and outside of Wonder Woman. But anyway, this movie, it had a couple of legit funny moments. And I can't believe I'm going to say this, but Ben Affleck is a pretty good Batman. Well, I never thought I'd ever say that, but he is. And Momoa being good as Aquaman. And, of course, Irons is good in just about everything that he does. So those are really like the only bright spots of the film whenever they're in there. But they rely too much on humor, like kind of forced humor with Flash. And it's really annoying. And he gets really annoying, too. But the most annoying thing about the entire film and the entire Justice League is Superman. Now, not to be so spoilery on this film, but it's like they're trying to take out this boss. Okay, think of it like this RPG game, and you're trying to take out the boss, and nobody has the right powers to do it. But you get this one dude who's got all the powers, and now suddenly it's all over, and now you win. And it's, well, then why do we need a team since we got Superman? And I just have to roll. Why is it called Justice League? Why not just make another Superman movie? I don't know. It just makes me wonder why they even need a team in the first place. But
it's no spoiler that Superman does end up coming back. I feel like there's been a lot of talk about his mustache in the context of making fun of Justice League. Like the actor had a mustache and they had to CGI it out of the movie and it's done very badly. So this wouldn't be a topic of discussion if he didn't come back after having died in Batman versus Superman.
Right.
Which that's not a shock to anyone.
No. I just became incredibly frustrated with it. I mean, incredibly frustrated with the whole DC thing. I've had hope in it. The only good hope that they have is Wonder Woman and you know, the Dark Knight trilogies and really just the Dark Knight itself. But other than that, that's been the latest thing that I've seen. So it's like kind of frustrating.
Sure. Steven Spielberg, he gave a talk several years ago before this trend of like expanded universes and plotting movies out for years got a lot worse, where he said, eventually, like, this is going to be the end of big Hollywood studios. Like, if you make plans for 5 movies down the road and all of a sudden you have a movie that doesn't do very well, like Justice League is, like, I feel like it's doing well overseas and it'll still make a shit ton of money, but less than they're expecting. And it's just diminishing returns. Eventually, all this investment is not going to pay off. Brian, what else? What else?
Next, I watched The Mummy with Tom Cruise, the new one.
Speaking of expanded universes,
yeah, like I like action movies. I feel like that's just something I'll watch on default. Shockingly, not terrible. Like I was expecting the worst, but like. So we talk about typecasting. People are casting famous people in different roles, and it's hard to get them out of that roles. Tom Cruise is action movie guy. So like whether he's in a Mission Impossible movie or The Mummy, he's basically playing the same character, and that's fine with me because it's almost like he flew from Britain down to Egypt, and that's what he's doing. And that's totally great. And for if you want just like token action, it's really quite good. My only huge complaint is – I'm going to be a little bit spoilery here for personal reflection because I want to ask you about it, John.
Sure.
There's a plane crash, and it's an army plane, and there's like no one around it. So my question for you is: were you in Evansville when the army transport plane hit the Drury Inn?
Yes. I've always lived outside of Evansville.
Right. Well, and, but I mean,
but
like
yes. That was in like the early to mid 90s, and it was certainly big news.
Big news then.
Big news, now, a big event, a lot of response, yes.
Yes, there's a plane crash. There's like no response, and which is very frustrating.
A downed plane in the middle of a field.
Yeah, and it's an army plane with valuables on it, and there's just like no one there checking it out at night, just a couple guards.
So I always think of that as like a budgetary problem. Like in the most recent James Bond movie, there's on its surface a pretty good car chase through like the streets of Venice or Rome or wherever they are at a certain point in that inspector. But there are no other cars on the road. It's just one car chasing another car.
Oh, nice.
And it's just, once you sit and think about the scene a little more, like, they probably should have run into some traffic at some point.
Yeah. But so an action movie we're seeing. It's at Redbox.
Okay. That's a contrarian opinion than the critical consensus on The Mummy.
Yeah,
but right. I think a lot of that is rejection of, I don't want to be force-fed another expanded universe. Like the universal dark universe where there's going to be a Jekyll and Hyde and there's going to be an Invisible Man and a Creature from the Black Lagoon and all those old monster movies are going to get rebooted. I don't know. That was very much in like the latest King Kong movie that came out earlier this year.
Yeah, I didn't really understand why they had to name some of the characters Jekyll and Hyde. That was very confusing to me, but I just ignored it and moved on.
So. All right, fair enough. I recently watched Jane, a documentary about Jane Goodall that assembles a lot of footage from her early career as a naturalist. As far as like the work she was doing, extremely interesting.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the place she occupied as like a woman doing science, extremely interesting.
Right.
As far as just like changing gender norms during the period of her activity where she gets married and she gets divorced and there's what are they going to do about their kid? He can't just frolic around in the jungle like he has been doing. Eventually this has to end. It's extremely interesting, very relevant. She's such an effective storyteller and like narrator of what is happening around her. She is a very impressive woman.
Yeah.
As far as the work that she did. And it's a great movie. Jane documentary. Anything else, Drew, to throw up there?
I saw, I had to remind myself about this. I saw a Jim Carrey documentary that wasn't anti-vaccination.
Okay, that's a good.
But
start.
It was an anti-vaccination episode of Family Guy that made me think about this. Yeah. But
it's two terrible things in one sentence.
Exactly.
But I'll get to that in a minute. But Jim Carrey apparently had a crew following him around, a documentary crew, when he was making Man on the Moon, which was the Andy Kaufman movie. And so they went back and released that. And he did an interview with some people over what he did and how he felt and all this sort of stuff. And he, well, what he said, and he even said this, was just, it makes completely, it just nonsensical. He said when he accepted the role to be Andy Kaufman, or he actually had to try out for it, he was really nervous and he had to do a whole bunch of research and he had to try out for it. And he was just like, what in the world? But he said he had this moment where Andy Kaufman kind of entered into him.
Ugh.
And he said, I know this makes no sense, but I was no longer Jim Carrey. I was Andy Kaufman. And so for that 2 or 3 years that they spent, you know, making this movie, he was like, he went full in the deep end of method acting. He was completely in character of Andy Kaufman and that side stage act that he did.
Yeah.
It was really interesting to see how he became that and how he got out of it. So he said that once the movie was over, he just kind of, it was like Andy left him. And I'm going, such a weird thing to hear, you know, just kind of, just an interesting perspective of the psychoanalysis of how you get into a movie and how you get out of it. And so
I really feel like the tide is turning on how much people put up with method actors. And I'm going to put this on Jared Leto and his like Suicide Squad background where he's like shipping dead rats and used condoms to his castmates to get them to hate him. They're like, oh, this is what the Joker would do. Go fuck yourself. You're not the Joker. Don't send me a used condom. Is there anything in that movie that acknowledges how like ridiculous this whole thing might possibly be?
You get the feeling how awkward it all is when he's interacting with Danny DeVito and he's interacting with the other people that when he was, you know, when Kaufman was on Taxi, and how he's interacting with Jerry Lawler. Like, you know, Jerry Lawler's not playing the 1970s Jerry Lawler professional wrestler. He's actually the real Jerry Lawler, and here's Carrie acting, you know, being the full-fledged Andy Kaufman. And it is so completely ridiculous. You see how they don't get it, and they're not playing along with whenever he's backstage and not acting. He's still full-fledged Kaufman. You look at this and you feel the awkwardness. It crawls on your skin. It is so toe-curling bad, and that you feel for him. But you get a really interesting side of how Jim Carrey got into the film. Now, I don't know. I haven't seen Man on the Moon. I don't know if it's
very good. It's a very good movie.
Well, I guess then it kind of paid off. But I don't know how you can do that professionally and still kind of keep a, you know, your reputation as whatever else. But he also talked about some other movies that he did that he kind of had to do the same thing, like Sunshine of the Spotless Mind.
Sure.
And he had to do something along those lines. And he talked about the other films that kind of got him ready for this. Now this is all like a big Truman Show. And I'm like, okay. I don't know if you're just pulling everyone's legs.
The documentary crew. Did he?
He did. He did.
Okay, yeah. So yeah. That's really not what the Truman Show is at all. Like,
yeah. Yeah, yeah, you're exactly right. But but anyway,
I'm paying these people to document all my activity and pay attention to me.
Yeah.
I've heard that is an interesting like way into movie making.
I don't know how you could do it, but it's like an hour 45 minutes to 2 hours. It's I don't know. You could spend it doing worse things in life. So
Brian, what else you got?
I've got How to Train Your Dragon. Okay.
Sure.
So first, because I know you love this movie.
I do.
In the Stranger Things podcast, the last one, the third one that you did. There's 9 minutes to go in the final podcast, and you mentioned How to Train Your Dragon. And I hate spoilers. I immediately stopped the podcast. The next day, I came home from work, got on my exercise bike, and pounded out How to Train Your Dragon.
Okay.
Then finished the podcast because okay. I wasn't going to have it ruined. So it's one of those things, like, I feel like I need to watch it again because I worry that I set my expectations too high. Like, it was amusing, but it wasn't incredible to me. Like, it wasn't Inside Out, which I said is, like, the pinnacle of animated movies. Just funny. I just really like that one. Anyway, so very good, though. Top 5 animated movies, maybe 10. I don't know. You can talk me up or down. You can now explain to me what is so great about it.
It's a approximation of the best emotion that movies can evoke in a person, which is joy. It pulls joy out of the viewer. Not only that, but just like it totally syncs up with a lot of how I feel about history and politics and science, where tradition is only tradition until someone wonders why this is our tradition in the first place. Is there a possible better way to go about doing things? Like Hiccup's realization that everything that he thought about the world was incorrect, and not only what he thought about the world, but what everybody he has ever known is incorrect, and what like the responsibility of that. And you couple that with how incredible it looks and the score, which I think is one of the best scores of the decade. The 2010s, at least. And we talked about the ending in that Stranger Things podcast in relation. A pretty solid comparison, if I do say so myself.
Right. That was apt. That was good.
Yeah. It's one of the best movies of the 2010s for me. The next thing that I have watched is a Richard Linklater movie called Last Flag Flying. Richard Linklater of Everybody Wants Some, Boyhood, the Before series, Dazed and Confused. Bernie, yeah. If not one of the best directors working, like his movies aren't necessarily the most visually inventive, I would 100% put him in the category of some of the best writers, some of the best dialogue creators in movies working today. That being said, Last Flag Flying is a complete dud. I went in with very high expectations. It's about Bryan Cranston, Steve Carell, and Lawrence Fishburne as old Vietnam War buddies, and they go on a road trip to bury Steve Carell's son, who most recently died in Afghanistan. It is really difficult to find the same spark that Linklater put into something like Everybody Wants Some and whatever is happening in Last Flag Flying. Like, he's a very prolific director, putting out a movie a year, if not more. And maybe he could have used some more time here, because Lawrence Fishburne, Steve Carell, Bryan Cranston, those are all great actors, and they are just not served by the dialogue here. I feel like Taking Chance, the HBO movie starring Kevin Bacon from a few years ago, a far better movie. And even in the context of like dead soldiers and escorting their bodies home, it barely even works on that level as far as finding the emotion in that. It's just a completely flat movie that I was very disappointed in. Brian, what else you got?
School field trip, we went and saw Wonder, which you thought was the genetic Wonder.
Why a school trip?
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to think about.
The language arts department did a whole like district community reads. There's like free copies of the book all around town.
Oh, it's a book. Okay.
Yeah, it's a book. There you go. That explains it. It was cute. Like usually Owen Wilson is distractingly bad, and he just plays the kid's dad. And he and Julia Roberts did a phenomenal job. I was thoroughly impressed with everyone involved. It's probably like, I don't know, say people should go watch it.
So, I've heard it's a big tearjerker movie.
Yeah, it is. I've seen more tearjerkerier movies, however you want to say that.
You got there.
but there were some eighth grade girls and some teachers who pretty much had tears in their eyes most of the movie. So was,
I don't know why I laughed at that just then.
It's uncomfortable laughter because it's an uncomfortable story to watch, but it's well done. So there you go.
All right. I'm going to throw another movie that I did not really enjoy into the mix after Last Flag Flying with Valhalla Rising. This is from Nicholas Winding Refn, who we at the MMC know from Only God Forgives, a movie that almost destroyed the club in its infancy. So offensive and aggressively unpleasant was it. He also, Nicholas Winding Refn, made the Pusher trilogy, which is a Danish series of crime movies, and those are fantastic. There is a clear narrative happening, which I feel like is an important part of a movie. And he also made Drive, which is an even clearer narrative, and again, one of the better movies of the decade. Valhalla Rising? Not so much. It's just... I want to say it's an allegory for something, some biblical story, some Norse myth. Mads Mikkelsen is in it as the baddest man alive, who doesn't speak in the movie, and he only has one eye, much like Odin, the Norse god of gods. I don't know, there's probably something there. But it's just very impressionistic, very portentous. The dialogue is elevated past the point of... this is a sentence that people would say to each other. Stylish? Sure, whatever. But there has to be substance behind your style, and whereas Winding Refn occasionally is able to pull that off, in Valhalla Rising, he did not.
Is this an action movie?
Yes. It's a period action movie where it's set in, like, the... I want to say, like, 13th century, 12th century, something like that.
Okay. I'm going to watch it anyway when I find it.
Good luck to you. Good luck to you with that. Drew, anything else? This is our last round.
No, I really don't have much more. I mean, Samantha Bee's been hitting it out of the park when her late night show's been going on here.
Like, she has a weird airing schedule.
Yeah, she does. She's on for like 2 or 3 weeks, and then she takes these weeks off, and you know, she's only on once a week anyway, so I don't know. I don't understand why she can't be on every week or any of those other things. But
it's not like there's an obscene amount of content to be dealt with on any given day.
I have to agree with you. Yeah, I don't understand. But I mean, she should be a nightly thing, just like the Daily Show and you know, the others. But you know, she's not, and they just have her once a week, but like, hey, whatever. I mean, she does a nice job. I mean,
I do really enjoy her show.
But I just wish she would just be on a daily basis, just like the others. But TBS, is in their infinite wisdom, is doing things we didn't even think about 4, 5, 6 years ago. But I am a bit upset about TBS because they're bringing in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and I do not like that show. I do not find Andy Samberg funny at all. So I'm going to have to really dial it back now. I know Brian loves Andy Samberg and Brooklyn Nine-Nine, so...
Sorry, I love it so much I stopped watching it after 2 seasons.
But Drew, I think the solution to this problem is you got to get a second cable channel. Yeah. Like, your package is really restrictive, it sounds like.
Well,
I talk to Comcast or whoever.
You know, the thing is that TBS has Seinfeld, and so I just like to come home and then Seinfeld's on.
You can get Hulu and watch any episode.
That's true. Hulu is vastly impressing me over Netflix lately.
I have Hulu. I watch it, but I'm just, I don't know. It's just a bit of a lazy thing. So,
Brian, last thing.
You want to talk about Spider-Man Homecoming?
Sure.
Yeah.
So Spider-Man Homecoming, probably one of the better Spider-Man, and in my opinion, better Marvel movies. Like, my big complaint, like, the action was good. Story was fine. The girl who plays like the high school senior, she does not look like a high school senior on any planet I've ever lived on.
Would that be that's a love interest?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, complaint there. The other complaint would be that Iron Man, like, shows up at just weird times. Like, he's moving his headquarters, and he just doesn't seem to care, to defend himself or even bother showing up when necessary. And then he's lecturing people. So, like, the Iron Man aspect of it was really awful, but the Spider-Man part was really good.
Yeah, I would largely agree with that. I recently posted a review on our website for Spider-Man Homecoming. Really long review. I broke into 3 pages, which rarely happens for me. I really enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun. Tom Holland is, I think, definitely the most enthusiastic Spider-Man, which goes a long way. Like, I feel like he's supposed to be an enthusiastic character. Michael Keaton is one of the better, if not the best, Marvel villain thus far. That's usually a failing of theirs. Like, he's just a relatable person, as villainous as he is. But the movie also takes great care to show that he is nowhere near the most villainous person in the neighborhood, much less the grander universe. I do wish that the plot was a little more inventive. Like, you can just see all these beats coming if you've seen any superhero movie. But it's not a deadly criticism or anything. It's just like, I wish this movie could have been exceptional, but instead it's just a very well done superhero movie.
Well, I think, if I may just interject just quickly here, is that I think that from my view that Spider-Man was not supposed to be so much energetic as he is snarky. Maybe energetically snarky, maybe you can be both at the same time, which is why I'm so on the side of, was it Andrew Garfield? I like his Spider-Man more so than I do any of the others. Mm-hmm. Because he was much more of a snarky little guy and much more entertaining for me. And his story with the girl was much more compelling than Mary Jane in this particular one, in this particular scene, and then in this story. But... you know, I don't think Homecoming was all that bad. I thought it was very entertaining and very good. And you both hit the nail on the head about Iron Man and all that sort of thing. So I agree with you on those points. But I think I just think Garfield was a little bit better.
The last thing we're going to talk about is a German movie that contains,
of course, way to wrap it up.
That contains 14 cuts in it only, and it's called Stations of the Cross. I don't have the director's name off the top of my head, but the premise is that each scene represents a station of the cross. There's 14 of them. And each of those scenes is just a static camera conversation between two people or several people, or like a PE class or a lecture or whatever. But it's all in a single take. And I'm not crazy about single take ostentatiousness. It's not as impressive as I think a lot of people think. For me, it's not as impressive. It tends to get a little distracting when there's a lot of stuff happening in the background. But when it's just a conversation, a discussion, I'm much more on board with that. The premise is that it's this ultra conservative Catholic sect in Germany, and it's confirmation time for the main character, and she has a brother who they think is autistic, but he might just be a late talker. He's like 3 or 4 and he hasn't said a word yet. And her priest, who thinks that Vatican II, the big Catholic conference wherein they stopped doing Latin masses and allowed the priest to face the congregation, among many other things, was satanically influenced. He's very strict while also being charismatic and able to sell the dogma that he's pushing. This priest talks a lot about sacrifice, and they have to be warriors for the church. And hey, remember that there were martyrs that were 11 and 12 years old in just the 20th century in Mexico. And that's a great thing, and you should aspire to be like that. And this teenage girl, who very much believes in the Catholic sect that she is in, goes down that path. The Stations of the Cross, of course, is the various memorable instances that Jesus went through as he was going to be crucified. And it's not as bleak as that, certainly. Like, this girl living in the modern age isn't, she doesn't get a crown of thorns pressed onto her head, but it's like metaphorical, and her various falls and what those mean. And it was extremely interesting, extremely verbose and erudite. Like, there's a lot of dialogue in this movie, but there's something to be said for like the German language. It's usually comes across as so harsh and staccato, but when it's used enthusiastically, and even if the words coming out of these characters' mouths are frankly gross, I've never thought of German as like a beautiful language, but Stations of the Cross brought me around on it. And coming from an ex-Catholic that I am, I just recognize a lot of the traditions and the debates that were happening in the movie, and I really enjoyed it. Great movie. Are you going to go find that, Brian?
No, that is absolutely not on my watch list.
I showed Blair.
Fell asleep listening to you talk about it.
Oh, gosh. I showed Blair the first scene, which is like, the first scene is 12 minutes of these confirmation candidates in a classroom as their teacher is talking to them, giving them their final lesson before confirmation. I showed that to her. She was intrigued, but I mean, she didn't end up watching it. And if you're not on board or with that first scene, the movie isn't going to change your mind as it goes along.
Is it 90 minutes or is it 2 hours?
It's like 2 hours, give or take.
Okay.
Sounds like it's 6 hours.
It keeps you on the edge of your seat.
Oh, man. So that you can wake up when you fall off it.
Das ist gut.
Yeah, beautiful. Beautiful words coming out of Drew. So that'll do us for this episode of What Have You Been Watching? Check us out on the internet at MediaCommovie.club. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. Click on our Amazon link, maybe to do your Christmas shopping on our website, and then shop as normal through Amazon. We get a little kickback, and it helps us keep the site running. And reviews on iTunes help us reach more people. Right at this moment, we are discussing Culture Clash movies, or we would be if I wasn't late on posting the Big Sick review, which is our first movie, followed by Morris from America and Dances with Wolves. I'm going to bang that review out tonight, so that should be posted by the time this episode is up. And you are listening to it, enthralled at what is happening at the MediaCommovie.club. So, thank you for joining me tonight, guys.
Hey, thanks, Sean.
Have a good night.